This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
DC politicians want to enact harmful credit card mandates that could take away your cash back and rewards points. Perks that stretch your budget and make life a little easier. Losing these benefits means less money for your family's everyday essentials like gas and groceries. The perks you rely on could disappear, leaving you with higher costs and fewer options. Tell Congress to guard your card and oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card mandates.
Paid for by Electronic Payments Coalition.
This episode is supported by Clear Protein. And I've got to say, this one really surprised me. Most protein powders, thick, chalky, and you have to choke them down with some milk. Clear is totally different. It's a whey protein isolate that mixes clear in water. More like a sports drink than a heavy shake. You still get 20 grams of protein per serving with zero sugar, zero lactose, and none of that bloated feeling you get from traditional shakes. The flavors are actually good too. Strawberry watermelon and wild blue raspberry are my go-tos. It's been perfect for after workouts or even just that midday pick-me-up when you don't feel weighted down by food. And because you're a listener, you get 20% off your order, the best discount they offer anywhere. Just head over to Clear Protein and use code ZEROSIGNAL at checkout. That's Clear with a K, clearprotein.com, code ZEROSIGNAL.
You're tuned into Zero Signal, a show about what they won't say and what you're probably already thinking. No fluff, no filters, no bullshit. Let's crack it open.
At this time, I'm going to ask you to fasten your seatbelt.
So tonight, I think we have a pretty interesting topic at hand. I know I went down some pretty deep rabbit holes with this one, but have you ever noticed how the biggest mysteries on Earth don't really seem to happen in the open? They tend to happen underground or under the ocean.
I feel like everything happens underground. Are you talking about secret bunkers, hidden bases, Area 51 kind of stuff?
Yeah, pretty close, man. I'm talking about CERN. It's a 16.6-mile ring that is a 12-foot-wide tunnel buried 330 feet under the ground. That's roughly the length of a football field, and it's under the French-Swiss border. Thousands of international scientists from all over the world go there to study and research. Pretty cool fact that I discovered is that the magnets that kind of power the particles is colder than outer space. It's roughly only 1.9 degrees above absolute zero, which is mind-boggling to think about. And if you ask the internet, it's just not a place that they're studying physics. It's a place that they're messing with the paranormal, the metaphysical, and some even say the occult.
Yeah, I've done a lot of good research on CERN. There's a lot of interesting things going on there. And really, depending on who you ask, CERN is either unlocking the secrets of the universe or perhaps unlocking something that we were really never supposed to see.
Yeah. Like portals, timeline shifts. Some even claim that we're rebuilding the Tower of Babel. Also, interesting fact, people swear that when CERN was powered up in 2012, something shifted, like the reality kind of glitch, like we went through an alternate dimension.
Ooh, I love the mandolin effect crowd. It's like experiencing something for the first time, yet you feel like you swear you've seen it multiple different times. Like that logo used to look way different, even though it was just introduced today. And you're like, wow, I've seen this before. But you know, that crowd's pretty interesting. And then theory's pretty interesting as well.
Yeah, there's definitely some pretty interesting things that I personally remember that when you look back at the internet archives, it's not what you thought it was. But here's the thing. Even the scientists admit that they're smashing particles together to recreate the instant after the Big Bang. So what if something happened in that moment, like a microscopic explosion that really opened doorways to a parallel dimension, or I think the scarier option, like the doorway to a place that have so not nice spirits or fallen angels in it?
Yeah, it's always a good question. Is it doorway to what? To heaven, to perhaps to hell, or maybe even another universe?
And that's the question we'll explore tonight. And tonight, we're going to walk through it. We're going to go down these deep rabbit holes. And I think a good place to start was with the history of CERN. And if you want to take that away, go ahead, my friend.
Yeah, I'd love to. CERN, or the European Organization for Nuclear Research, is the world's largest particle physics laboratory, which straddles the French-Swiss border near Geneva, Switzerland. Its mission is pretty simple, but audacious. Build the most powerful instruments human can make to study the tiniest particles of nature and the forces that kind of govern them. The centerpiece of this experiment is the Large Hadron Collider, or the LHC, which is a 27-kilometer circular tunnel where two proton beams are whipped to near light speed and steered into these head-on collisions. Those microscopic smash-ups briefly recreate early universe conditions so researchers can read what reality is really made of. In July of 2022, the LHC began their run three, raising the collision energy to a world record of 13.6 tera electron volts, essentially making the collider a brighter flashlight into the subatomic world. Think of the LHC like a racetrack, underground, and the detectors, Atlas, CMS, Alice, LHCb, like stadium-sized cameras that surround collision points and take millions of pictures per second. The machine is kept colder than deep space. Magnets operate at 1.2 Ks using this superfluid helium and feeds on an accelerator chain that preps the beam. It's an industrial scale orchestra of cryogenics, magnets, vacuum systems, and timing electronics that are all synchronized into the billionth of a second. CERN is also a global computing enterprise. Every second of data can fill libraries. So analysis rides on the worldwide LHC computing grid, a federation of more than 170 data centers across 42 countries, offering roughly 1.4 million cores and about 1.5 exabytes of distributed storage. That global backbone lets thousands of scientists to log in from their home institutions to sift collisions for new particles, rare decays, or subtle deviations from the standard model. And historically, CERN pioneered how we share information. In 1989, Tim Berners-Lee proposed the World Wide Web there. The first website went live from CERN soon after that event occurred. When we look at the quick history milestones, so CERN was born in 1954 out of the post-war ideal science for peace. 12 European states signed on to rebuild basic science together, pulling budgets and their super brain powers into this neutral hub near Geneva, Switzerland. From the start, the lab's culture blended open collaboration with these engineering moonshots, really setting the tone for the all mega projects that followed. The earlier accelerator era moved fast. PS established CERN as a machine building powerhouse, or really a super proton. In the late 1970s, enabled proton antiproton collisions, which produced the W and Zs and bosons, or the carriers of the weak force, announced in 1983 and later recognized with the 1984 Nobel Peace Prize. Those discoveries proved CERN could not only build record machines, but also deliver epical physics. From 1989 to 2000, the LEP, or the Large Electron Position Collider, wrapped around the same 27-kilometer tunnel we use today. And maybe I'll stop there because I'm nerding out, right, about all this science coming from Amazon. So what's your take?
Yeah, man, I'm interested in these particle colliders. And another one that I find interesting, and we'll have to do a show on, is called Oak Ridge. So there's one out in Tennessee. Again, a lot of these particle colliders were developed roughly a decade after World War II. And the main purpose was just to study nuclear physics. A lot of them were used for post-war and industrialization. Obviously, the arms race was a big deal. We were trying to outpace, particularly the Soviets. And so we did all this research to explore Einstein's theory of relativity. All in all, there's 30,000 plus particle accelerators. Most of them are used for medical or industrial use. I'm sure most of us here have unknowingly been inside of a particle accelerator for some of our medical testing. And I know industry uses them magnitude of all things like shrink wrap. There's some pretty interesting uses for these machines. But there's also a subcategory of roughly about 1,200. They're called cyclotrons, and they are mainly used for two things, isotope production and then some medical uses, mainly research. This is where it gets fun. So there's another 70 plus large cyclotrons that are used for research and light sources. So these are specifically used for science and other type of technological applications. So these all kind of fall underneath the particle accelerator class. There's actually only 7 operational particle colliders, and CERN is one of them. And I wanted to know if there's more being built, but China is building one that's going to end up being 100 kilometers and is supposed to be in use sometime in the next 2 to 4 years. That one's almost 4 times the size of the one out in Switzerland. And the future circular collider, essentially an upgrade to CERN. So eventually that 27 kilometer loop is, they're going to expand it up to 91 kilometers. And Japan has one in the works, and the United States also has one in the works, but that one's still pretty far off.
Yeah, it's some scary stuff. And I know CERN is actually increasing their scope, and they got some things planned for the future that maybe we'll get into a little bit later. You also mentioned something about Oak Ridge that took me back a few years. One of my very good friends at Amazon at the time, he actually came from Oak Ridge. He was part of the law enforcement arm of some of the nuclear stuff in the federal government and got some inside peeks there. A bit awesome person taking our show. Unfortunately, just a couple of years ago, he passed away from brain cancer. So I don't know if it was something related to being around all this stuff, but it can be super scary. And we're talking about smashing particles together and studying the outcomes. A lot of that time reminds me of the atom bomb and what are we going to blow up if they do something wrong? But inevitably, across the forums, TikTok and YouTube and Reddit and all these alternate reality communities, CERN becomes really the anchor point for these claim clusters. Some of the very high level stuff that I've heard about was dimensional portals and wormholes, occult symbolism and hidden rituals, reality glitches like we talked about with the Mandela effect, time travel and reverse causation, world ending black holes being created, and weather anomalies and just all these global effects, and numerology and like these hidden codes that are in the CERN logo itself. And probably we'll go down a lot of these rabbit holes and talk a little bit about them, but I just think there's so much science, and this has been going on for so long, and it's under a major city in Geneva where they have these huge particle colliders that a lot of people, even though they hear a lot about it, they probably don't think a lot about it, what's going on underneath their feet. And it's very advanced stuff, and it's coming up with some really good stuff. Though the World Wide Web was later developed, core concept came out of here, was later developed by the federal government, and specifically like the cloud and data storage, it later evolved from it. But it's coming up with some really fascinating stuff, and they're studying things what they call the God particle, the foundations of humanity. And it makes me go back what you're talking about at the very beginning of this episode was, perhaps are we building another Tower of Babel? And the big takeaway of that is God's going to break it down and cause confusion. And a lot of the time with the misinformation that's coming out on the internet is confusion of the people. So perhaps it's also leading into this another fall of Babel.
Yeah, you mentioned it earlier. The one thing that kind of I didn't know, I was a little bit ignorant on CERN as to the actual organization and the early life of this particle collider. For whatever reason, I thought it was something relatively new in the past decade and a half. But like you said, they were founded in 1954. But the thing that kind of blew my mind is I didn't realize that they're the one that created the World Wide Web. And I thought that was pretty interesting. Yeah, so inventor Sir Tim Berners-Lee, a British scientist working at CERN, he helped create the World Wide Web. And his ultimate goal was to help CERN researchers share documents easily across different computers and networks. He came up with the HTML, the HTTP, the URL, and the first web server and browser. And in 1993, he released the web's code to the public free of charge, ensuring that it would become a universal system rather than a commercial product. And I know mostly the government and the military kind of laid the base for the internet, but CERN and Sir Tim Berners-Lee actually made the rail cars that kind of travel on the back of the network. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's super fascinating, the things that they're coming coming up with. And this is the stuff we're learning about 50 years later, that they've done these really fantastic research that has helped in some senses, perhaps hurt in others, greater society as how we consume information. But it also leads to misinformation. And a lot of times, even though a lot of people may be speaking the same language, but perhaps we're not, I could be talking about a conspiracy theory and somebody else calling me a Looney Tune because I've done a different research. And it exists. And I think we'll get into it in future episodes, but like the dead internet theory and how much is reality out there versus you talking to bots and is being fake and driven by the media and driven by people that want to influence you to purchase something or believe a certain way or to vote a certain way. It can be all really interesting stuff. So we talked about the science behind CERN, that conspiracy equal map that has evolved over the last dozen years or so. What is one of the theories that you think could actually be true with CERN? What's something we should be on our radar and be on the lookout for?
Yeah, so I think it's probably been completely disproven, but I still think it poses a concern. So this isn't Jay's take on what the collider is or isn't. This is some pretty significant scientists were afraid that when you smash these particles together, that you could create like a mini black hole, which could eventually consume the Earth and completely annihilate the planet. Back in this activation in 2008, doomsdayers flooded petitions and forums warning of an Earth-devouring black hole. The collider's proton collisions mimic the Big Bang conditions and could potentially bring singularities that eventually grow uncontrollably. There was actually a lawsuit brought by a Hawaiian resident named Walter Wagner. He sought to halt the operation, citing cosmic ray risk. He was concerned that it would eventually destroy the Earth despite the best intentions. The people at CERN do admit that black holes are created when some of these particles collide, but they last nanoseconds. Like they hit, they create a black hole, and then it dissipates pretty immediately. But some scientists are concerned that there's like a 1 in a million possibility that one time these particles are going to collide, and it's going to create a black hole and eventually lead to a chain event that's going to create multiple black holes, which eventually turn into this one spiraling disk that sucks all the matter back into it.
Yeah, I've heard that theory before. Some conjecture online states that in 2012,
Corporate megastores are spending millions lobbying DC politicians on one-sided policies that send small businesses tumbling. They want to enact harmful credit card mandates that take resources away from your local credit union and community bank, leaving Main Street businesses with less access to credit, making it harder for your family to pay for everyday goods like gas and groceries. Tell Congress to guard your card and oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card mandates.
Paid for by Electronic Payments Coalition.
Actually did create a black hole that swallowed Earth. Then it turned everything that we're experiencing today into almost a simulation. So all those people that think life is just a simulation and nothing's reality, a lot of folks believe that is why it occurred. I think ultimately we're talking about portals and parallel realities and really the Mandela effect. It has some association there. I think in the world of CERN lore, no story has really spread further or perhaps even inspired more fascination than the portal theory. It's this ideal that the Large Hadron Collider doesn't merely study the universe, it punctures it. According to this narrative, when the collider's proton beams smash together at near light speed, they create this microscopic ruptures in the fabric of our reality. If you would call them maybe temporary gateways or mirror dimensions. Believers say these tears might explain the strange collective memory phenomenon known as the Mandela effect, in which large groups of people recall events that never officially happened. The name comes from countless individuals who swore Nelson Mandela died in prison in the 1980s, even though he was released, became president of South Africa, and lived until 2013. For those who subscribe to the portal theory, the explanation is simple. CERN opened the wrong door and reality slipped in. In the months leading up to the July 5th, 2022, the day CERN was scheduled to restart the collider for its third major run, known as Run 3, that ideal really erupted across social media. The hashtag CERN, hashtag Mandela Effect, and hashtag Parallel Universe really trended on TikTok and YouTube as creators posted countdown videos warning of coming reality shifts. Some predicted this like mass glitches in consciousness, while others framed their restart as this spiritual awakening. One self-described whistleblower claimed the collider had the power to open other dimensions and manipulate the weather, calling it a weapon disguised as a scientific project. Thousands of viewers really echoed that sentiment online in the comment sections, promising to record the moment the beam was activated. Many described that day as this global threshold, the instance humanity would unknowingly cross into another version of itself. At the heart of the excitement was this simple date and time, July 5th, 2022, when the LHC would be powered up to 3.6 trillion electron volts, the highest energy level ever achieved in human history. That machine, stretching 17 miles beneath the border of France and Switzerland, would smash particles together faster than any point before. For scientists, this was a triumph of engineering, of internal collaboration, marking the culminations of years of upgrades and maintenance. But those watching from the outside, it was something else entirely. A cosmic experiment, perhaps, with this metaphysical stakes. On forums and Discord channel, users speculated that the machine's energy output might pierce the veil between parallel universes. Some feared really the shift so subtle that no one would notice until it was absolutely too late. This untraceable slide into a near identical copy of our world. Others was romantic about it, calling the dawn of the fifth dimension or the vibrational awakening. Now, we know that big day has arrived because we're talking several years in the past at this juncture, but some still conjecture that perhaps when they smashed these particles together back in July 5th of 2022, they created this giant black hole and all this weird stuff that we experience today is part of a simulation, is part of the Mandela effect that we slipped into this other dimension. Now, it seems a little far-fetched from my perspective, coming from a Christian worldview, but there is a lot of people that heavily believe that this occurred.
Yeah, sometimes you remember the 2012 Mayan apocalypse, right? How it was the world was supposed to end sometime, I think in December. I can't remember. Everybody was freaking out about it, which is so stupid. The one thing that they tie into CERN is that the world did end on December whatever, 2012. And it ended and CERN transported us to a different reality. So in that transportation to a different, I don't know, string timeline that some of these Mandela effect things we remember because we're from our timeline. But since we live in a different timeline, those of us that shifted with it remember things differently. And dude, I want to play a Mandela effect game with you and the audience can play along too. So some of these you may know, some of these you may not. But as a kid, do you remember it as the Berenstain Bears or the Berenstein Bears?
I remember it as the Berenstain Bears.
Correct. I do too. But apparently it is not. It's the Berenstain Bears. I remember it just like you do, with an E and not an A. That one's weird. And we can debunk some of this stuff, but I too remember it as the Berenstain Bears. So do you remember the Fruit of a Loom cornucopia? Like, you remember the underwear stuff we used to get?
Yeah.
Do you remember like the fruit cornucopia as this logo?
Yeah, wasn't it like grapes or something? I don't remember exactly. I feel like it was like grapes and apples or something along those lines.
Yeah. According to the internet, it never was. It never had a cornucopia. It looks like a horn thing that has like fruits and apples, and you just named off a bunch of them. That apparently is not the case. And I would have bet all my money that was the logo. And I don't know. Another one is called Shazam. I don't think we ever watched that movie, but do you remember who was supposed to be in that movie?
And when you said Shazam, I was thinking about the music recording app that you used to steal music for.
Yeah. But so lots of people remember a Sinbad. He used to be like a rapper back in like the 90s, being the main character in Shazam. But according to the internet, Shazam never existed, which I do vaguely remember Shaquille O'Neal being in some movie as a genie, but I also remember Sinbad being a genie. Again, something in my psyche, along with these other two examples that I do remember, but apparently Sinbad never was a genie on any movie.
What it could be though, as I'm thinking about that, I do remember Sinbad. He was in the cartoon movie that was very popular. It was like the Genie in the Bottle or something along those lines. That was a very popular movie cartoon when we were kid, and perhaps like Fruit of the Loom is getting confused with Fruit Loops or something. I wonder if there's just some like these mistakes that are happening.
Yeah. So what did Darth Vader say to Luke in Star Wars?
Isn't it, Luke, I am your father?
Yes. That's exactly how I remember it too. But the actual line, no, I am your father. Dude, I don't remember that ever. Like, no. It was always Luke, I am your father. Not no, I am your father. So again, another weird Mandela effect thing. And I don't know how sure we probably read this book or looked at it when we were kids in kindergarten or something, but you remember Curious George?
Yeah.
Did he have a tail or not?
He's a monkey. Yeah, he had a tail.
Yeah, I remember him having a tail too. And again, this could be one of those things where you're just thinking with your logical brain, like the animal's a monkey, of course it has a tail. But in the books, he never had a tail. He was a tailless ape or a tailless chimpanzee.
That's interesting.
Yeah, dude. So these all kind of blow your mind. So what did the Monopoly man wear? And we used to play Monopoly all the time with mom and dad. Do you remember if he wore something?
Top hat and a monocle, right?
Yeah. I remember it with a monocle too. Again, if you look at Monopoly on the internet today, he does not have a monocle. Is this blowing your mind? And I went through these earlier and I went through them a couple of years ago when somebody else was like presenting this. And I was like, dude, come on, you're making this stuff up. But no, the Monopoly man never had a monocle.
Wow.
And was it Looney Tunes, T-U-N-E-S, or Looney Tunes, T-O-O-N-S?
I don't remember, but I'm going to go with Tunes, T-O-O-N-S.
Exactly. Same thing I remember. Apparently it was Tunes, like referring to music, not Tunes as applying to cartoons. Like that one doesn't even make, if I was using my logical brain, even if I didn't remember, I would say, yeah, Tunes, T-O-O-N-S. Because it's a cartoon. But no, it was Looney Tunes, as in T-U-N-E-S, referring to music. Yeah, but that's seven interesting kind of Mandela effects. And I think you and I agreed on every single one. The only one we don't remember is Shazam, because I really don't remember watching that movie. But I do remember Sinbad as a genie on some boat. And I don't know, man, these are the kind of the big seven. There's a bunch of other ones, like Nelson Mandela. There was a big thing where he died in prison. I don't remember him dying in prison. I remember him alive until he died of old age. I know he went to prison. But there's a big part of the population that remembers him dying in prison. And that's another big one that they kind of source as to evidence of the Mandela effect.
Yeah, I talked about that one initially. When I was researching this stuff a while ago, I was like, yeah, he died in prison. And then it took me a minute to catch up and be like, no, actually, he lived. I watched some YouTuber that was traveling through South Africa and he visited his home and all these things. It's interesting. I just wonder if it's like this game of association. Like you ever play like telephone tag where I tell you something, then you tell your wife, and your wife tells somebody else, and by the time it gets to the very end, that story changes. Not completely, but there's facts that have changed or been exaggerated or replaced. I just wonder if there were so many of these brands back in the day that were ripping people off. Fruit of the Loom or Fruit Loops or what have you, that people just like routinely misassociate it with something else.
I know as when we're younger, and heck, we even do it as adults. Like you said before, you're a cop. People misremember stuff pretty easily. You can go to a crime scene and interview seven different people and get seven different stories. But something like this, where you and I remember the same thing, it's, I think imagery has a pretty significant effect on the human psyche. And like those kind of motifs and those pictures and the kind of branding tends to really ingrain itself in like your subconscious. And it's weird to me that say, something like Fruit of a Loom or even like the Monopoly Man, it's almost like at a certain point, do you argue was somehow a memory implanted in my brain? Because I would have bet if you went to a trivia game and you had to bet money, like I would, like, these are stupid questions. I'm going to bet $100 because I know I'm going to win. That's how ingrained it is. And we can do a whole episode on the debunking the Mandela effect, but this is some of the evidence people use to draw the conclusion that we shifted in reality. The interesting thing is, like, our kids, they're never going to remember anything about the Monopoly Man having a monocle or Curious George not having a tail because they weren't alive during the 80s and 90s. They wouldn't have experienced it. So they're just experiencing these kind of cultural motifs and this pop culture icons through the current day lens. If we were to talk to them, they would think we're lunatics.
It would be an interesting case study of what like the millennials would remember or like different generations from us that what we grew up with, because they still make Curious George books. I don't know if they've changed the drawing since then. Kids still play Monopoly. Like it's still a famous game. I don't know if it's changed or altered over the years, if they've changed their imagery, but it'd be interesting to see what different generations would remember or if you think that will tell if it's like a true association. Because a lot of times when I think of the Monopoly Man, I also think of Mr. Peanut, because that was like a popular character when we were kids as well. And they're both silly, goofy, and that you see these visuals of. And for some reason, in my mind, Mr. Peanut and Monopoly Man, even though I know one's a peanut, they look similar. And my brain just gets confused around it. So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah. And it's also, I think about it, I try to logic it out in my brain. I wonder if at one point in time, if there was like a product run, like in the 80s or 90s, where maybe Fruit of Loom for 3 or 4 months had the cornucopia Cornucopia, or the Monopoly man had a monocle for a special edition. And for whatever reason, that's the one that the kids, i.e. you and me and the people in our generation, remember. It's also interesting that, because I don't remember Nelson Mandela dying in prison, but that apparently happened in like the early to mid 80s. So I wouldn't have been cognitively developed to remember anything going on, let alone some guy dying. But people sure. older than us seem to remember him dying in prison during the 80s. You and I wouldn't remember that because, again, like I said, we weren't aware. We were children and our memories really hadn't formed.
Yeah, it's crazy stuff, man. It really is. And memory's so fallible. And what you latch on to, there's groups of people sitting around studying people as a culture and how can they use things to their competitive advantage. When I think about memory, when I used to train law enforcement officers and new recruits, we used to come into the police academy while they're all doing like a test or whatever, like they're focused on something else. And I would throw on a ski mask and I would come through the back doors of this large auditorium. I would throw a flashbang down the aisle. And it would explode. And I would have a gun. I would shoot it twice. I would grab one of my buddies, right? One of the other instructors, take them hostage and roll out. And then everybody would stop. And they've seen this flashbang go off. They've seen these blank rounds go off. And they're like in this state of shock because they were so focused on whatever the presenter was teaching them. And then when you stop and say, what do you remember? Like the description of what I was wearing, my clothing, what I had on my face, what firearm I was carrying was consistently different across the group of everybody that was standing there and witnessed the event. And it shows you how fragile memory is, in my opinion. Like it's a perfect case study because people are going to remember different things. Now, if I was launching a new business that nobody knew about, but I wanted you to know about it, would I use characteristics of other successful brands to influence your purchasing decision? I absolutely would because nobody knows me yet. I want to latch on to something that's already successful and have my own little spin on it before I branch out and do my own thing. But I want to pull some of their target audience away from them until I can develop it. It gives me that competitive like startup time for that brand. So I definitely think there are. And then there's a lot of smart people that all they do is dedicate their time and energy to studying markets and people and buying decisions. I think of Amazon. Obviously, they make all their money. Most people don't know this, but they make all their money in Amazon Web Services. The entire time I worked there, they actually lost money in the marketplace when it came to the stuff that most people know it for, buying products. But all of their research went in for you to actually buy their product, not what they were selling, but get you on target and send you a coupon if you don't click right away and influence that buying decision. They focused on moments when you were most likely influenced late at night or when you're surfing online or when you're tired and you can't fall asleep. They would start collecting that metadata to influence your buying decision. They would sell you any junk you want to buy, but they found the right time, place to do it. And it just shows you how easily we're persuaded. And if the right people step in your mind, like what they can make you remember, what they make you can believe. You know, that story is even told in the Bible when the false prophets come along, that they're going to influence people that I am God. And truly not. You're going to have to know the Bible to know that this person is Antichrist and not God, but you're going to be led astray. And they says a lot of people will be. And I think that shows how easily we can be convinced and changed and influenced.
Yeah, I don't know, man. So sometimes I think about like Nelson Mandela, something like that. And this is, now we're going down crazy rabbit holes here. And I don't necessarily believe this, but I'm just going to pose a plausible explanation because he was a fairly well-known figure and he was in jail for his beliefs and what he stood for.
Corporate megastores are spending millions lobbying DC politicians on one-sided policies that send small businesses tumbling. They want to enact harmful credit card mandates that take resources away from your local credit union and community bank, leaving Main Street businesses with less access to credit, making it harder for your family to pay for everyday goods like gas and groceries. Tell Congress to guard your card and oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card mandates.
Paid for by Electronic Payments Coalition.
If he did die in the 80s and the news article came out and they decided we have to replace him with somebody who looks like him so he can continue his message and was convince people that he didn't die, you're misremembering this, and this other guy can play out whatever legacy or whatever his role was in order to keep people calm. The other stuff, you can even look at the internet now. The internet today is so much different than the internet was even 10 years ago. You can go through and scrub whatever you want off the internet. You can inject stuff in the internet. So if most people get their information now from the World Wide Web. So if you want to have people question themselves or question news articles or question history, it doesn't take a whole lot of effort, especially with AI these days, to go back in and re-edit everything to have people see things the way you want them to see it. With the AI bot army, like, I think most of our collective unconscious anymore is no longer in books. It's no longer in telling stories by the fireside or communing with our friends and family and learning history and knowledge that way. It's going to your computer, your phone, typing something in to the search engine, and it spits out whatever it spits out, and most people are going to believe it without referencing their memory banks or referencing living sources or referencing even books at this point. So I guess there's a couple walkarounds with that. I just think the scary thing is, especially with these bots, we're seeing it now and we talk about it often, these bots can create videos that are getting so good. I think within the next year or two, we're not going to be able to tell the difference if it's a human, if it's AI generated, if it's a bot. It's just getting wild. You can rewrite all of history just with your advanced AI.
Yeah, it reminds me of these Reddit forums that I spend time on. And if people can string sentences together, people just assume it's AI. A lot of people always say, oh, thanks ChatGPT for writing this article for me. And it's, no, I actually wrote it. I have an advanced degree. I'm well educated. I don't write it 2 seconds on my phone. I try to put a nice piece together to educate folks. And it's people are now are like, if anything's intelligent out there, I just assume AI wrote it, because the human now can only like misspell sentences and have broken grammar. And I think about the Nelson Mandela point that you made, is there's two takeaways there. Could he be replaced to carry his message and influence the government and get presidency? And does somebody look like? Absolutely. But the other one is that a lot of times a martyr is more influential than somebody that dies of old age.
100%.
Right?
100%.
So perhaps there was a series of things that people wanted you to believe, that he was martyred for the sacrifice for South Africa at that time. It's hard to kind of pinpoint. So we've talked a lot about the Mandela effect. So if we get back to our story, 6 years before July of 2022, before the restart, the skies over Geneva became part of CERN's mythos. In June of 2016, a violent thunderstorm rolled across Western Switzerland, throwing jagged bolts of lightning over the region and setting the evening sky ablaze with flashes of electric blue and deep violet. At that time, amateur photographers and commuters caught the spectacle on their cell phones. The twisting clouds, the symmetrical rings, and lightning that seemed to kind of branch upward rather than down. Within hours, those photos were online, and by the next morning, they had gone viral with captions like, "What portal did CERN just open?" Conspiracy forums and YouTube channels seized on that image almost immediately. Many connected them to the experiment known as AWAKE, which had recently been in the news for its use of proton-driven plasma waves, language that sounded to the public ear suspiciously like energy tunnels or particle shock waves. Videos emerged with titles such as "The CERN Open Dimensional Gateway Over Geneva" and "Portal Cloud Phenomenon Explained." Dramatic soundtracks were laid under the images, often zooming into like sections of the cloud where faces or vortex-like shapes appear to emerge. And commenters actually claim to see eyes, serpents, even angel silhouettes, proof that argued that the collider's energy had interacted with the atmosphere in this kind of unnatural way. Over the following days, that imagery really spread beyond conspiracy circles into like our mainstream culture. Memes appeared on Twitter, pairing the storm's photos with quotes from Stranger Things or Doctors Who. Facebook groups titled CERN Watch and Portal Project sprung up overnight, each with thousands of members sharing screenshots of this event. A lot of them are saying that this thin veil between the worlds was really exposed. Some users even claim that the storm had appeared directly over the LHC's buried tunnel, and others swore the locals in Geneva reported hearing low rumbles or feeling this odd electromagnetic pulse through the sky. For many believers, that storm really became like this perfect symbol, nature itself reacting to human interference with this kind of fundamental forces of the universe. To this day, that portal cloud remains one of the most enduring pieces of visual evidence of that CERN conspiracy culture. And a lot of connect them back to like, they were seeing this portal being created or this black hole developing almost, because they never seen anything like this. They were seeing sky lightning. And I even saw sky lightning on a New York Post article that my wife shared with me today. And it is an absolutely spectacular
spectacular, beautiful thing that's really hard to pinpoint, that it's a natural phenomenon perhaps, but it looks supernatural when you witness it. And a lot of people connect that back to the black hole, which ultimately caused the Mandela effect as well. So I thought that was interesting that we do see some conspiratorial evidence in reference to what we're talking about today and where people are talking about the veil being lifted or the world being altered because of something they're doing over there.
I remember seeing, I think this is what you're talking about. They look like odd spirals in the sky. Is that what you're referring to, or is this something different?
Yeah, a lot of photographs of that and just like this crazy lightning, and people even like saying that these weird cloud shapes were angel and demon shaped and eyes and all this weird stuff that was just in rapid succession.
Yeah, I know every time one of those weird kind of spiral type things in the sky, people are always pointing to CERN or some of these other particle colliders. And like I said, there are seven around the world. So it's interesting. Again, I didn't do a ton of research into that. I think there are some possible explanations for that. A lot of people actually blame Elon Musk and his rockets for that type of stuff. I know there was one launch of a rocket that when it cleared the atmosphere, it did leave some sort of crazy looking, oddly symmetrical spiral in the sky, which to me doesn't make a lot of sense that it would have some sort of symmetry to it. It almost kind of looked like an imprint in the sky that took hours to dissipate. Like nature, I know nature can form stuff in symmetrical patterns, but you really don't see symmetry in the atmosphere because of the winds and the shearing. So I think that explanation as to what that could be is not something man-made in terms of rocketry leaving that imprint. I definitely think it could be man-made in terms of some sort of energy being shot into the sky.
Yeah.
But another interesting theory that I ran across, and I don't think this one gets too crazy, but you ever hear the time traveler sabotage theory? It's an interesting, like, philosophical kind of speculative idea. It's not as scientifically accepted, but scientists did reference it in a paper. And the long kind of story short, I don't want to bore you with a scientific paper and read it, so I'll just summarize it. So the Large Hadron Collider experienced a ton of delays, you know, a ton of hiccups, a ton of glitches during its early commissioning. And for example, in 2008, the collider had a significant malfunction in a certain sector due to magnet failure. And these two scientists named Nielsen, and I'm going to butcher his name, but Neomiya, wrote a theoretical paper suggesting that if people in the future didn't want a Higgs-producing event to happen, then the probability of it actually working would be seriously decreased. So essentially what their paper proposed, and again, this is a scientific paper, it works on the theory of relativity and time travel. So again, what it's suggesting is that someone in the future sees that a certain experiment will have catastrophic consequences, that something or someone from the future might do something to sabotage it in the past. So it's called the time travel sabotage. So essentially, boiling it down, it's saying that if someone has a time travel machine in the future, whenever we activate it now, or a large collider, and they pick up some of these energy disturbances, they can go back and purposely sabotage the experiment if it's not time for us to have it. I don't buy into that theory. I think it's theoretically fun to think about. But again, now the collider works, so I don't know what happened between 2008 and 2025, because apparently people from the future stopped coming back.
Actually, time travel is really connected to a lot of the theories that are floating right around it. Have you heard the connection between 3I Atlas and time travel, and obviously the HCL?
I heard some crazy remote viewer spew some story about 3I Atlas and how he communicated with the people on board, essentially telling him that, yeah, we're nice and we're coming there for peaceful reasons. I think remote viewing is a bunch of hogwash too, but go ahead and tell me your story.
Yeah, I agree with you. So just to backtrack a little bit for our listeners, when the astronomers spotted this object racing across the southern sky in July of 25, they named it 3I Atlas, the third confirmed interstellar visitor en route to our solar system. To the scientific community, it was obviously a comet and another messenger from the deep unknown, kind of offering a chance to study the material forged around another star. But beyond those observations, the name really really set off this tremor in collective imaginations. The word Atlas instantly connected this cosmic wanderer to another place that already carried that mythic weight, the tunnels beneath Geneva, where CERN's Atlas detector hums in the darkness, really studying collisions so violent they mimic the birth of the universe. Two instruments, worlds apart, suddenly shared a name, and in the language of modern myth, that was enough to really spark the fire online. In conspiracy circles, the coincidence became a revelation. The Atlas telescope that discovered the object looks upward, scanning for dangers from heavens. The Atlas detector at CERN looks downwards into the invisible architecture of matter. One surveys the infinite and the other recreates it. And then there was the number 3I, the third interstellar object. The number 3, already heavy with symbolic gravity in CERN folklore, run 3, the Trinity, the three circles of the collider, now really echoed from space. For those inclined towards pattern and parallels were irresistible. A third visitor from the stars discovered by Atlas in the same year, CERN's Atlas experiment prepared for new upgrades. As above, so below, the caption read. And the cosmic and the subterranean were really this dialogue again. Now, in the Reddit communities and on Twitter, what people were saying is they were obviously observing these consistencies with everything with the name of Atlas in it. And a lot of conjecture online stated that we're going to have this kind of impossible event that's going to occur late in 2025. And they connected it back to the Hadron Collider, creating this portal for time travel. And what they're thinking is that because of this portal, people were transported into the future. And now they know this horrible event's going to occur. And they're traveling back to our universe on this giant asteroid-shaped spaceship to warn us about what's going to happen. And they start looking into this numerology and all this weird stuff. But I do find it ironic that it's Atlas in the sky, Atlas below, like rare phenomenon. It all seems pretty weird. I don't know that I buy it, that we're creating these parallel universes, though I think there's potential that when we get into Revelations that we could open this portal to hell. And I think we'll get into some of those more revelation heavy ideologies in a little bit. But I thought it was pretty interesting because you were talking about time travel, that they're connecting it to us that we're all seeing today and people are trying to study.
Yeah, I think this is a kind of a good transition into some of the occult aspects of CERN. So I don't know if you saw the human sacrifice video that they did. They claim it was a prank, but the backstory is it very well could be a prank. I'm not trying to make a mountain out of molehill here. But of course, if somebody posts a video of some sort of human sacrifice ritual, what are you going to say? You're going to admit to it? But you know, I'll have to try to find it so we can put it in the show notes. But it's an interesting watch. And prank or not, it's still a little bizarre that somebody would, of all places, choose a large international organization to do a prank video. And let's just say it is a prank. What are they trying to communicate with that? Are they trying to go viral? And are they trying to send a message, real or not real? It seems like a weird way to communicate, regardless of the validity of the video. Have you had a chance to check that one?
I did. I remember CERN screaming, "Unauthorized prank," that occurred on our grounds. What I find interesting is when this occurred, it occurred in 2016. And if we backtrack a little bit, that was that storm I was talking about. It occurred the same year where everybody was taking pictures of it. I wonder if those two events are linked up. I think they even admit it, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they even admit it, the prank did occur on certain grounds were filming this video.
Yep.
Which I find really odd because of the amount of security clearances that you have to have to be filming stuff and posting it online. That's going to the extreme. And not that I've seen the full video, I've only seen clips of it, but I wonder if some people could potentially go to jail for it, right? Because they're posting classified information for the public to see. So with that in count, I wonder what's really going on there. And I think the bigger thing is, have you heard that they have the Shiva statue there?
Yeah, and that whole ceremony is freaky, bro. Have you seen that video? It's mind-blowing.
Even before really that viral sacrifice video, that presence of the bronze Shiva statue on CERN's main campus had really already become this lightning rod of speculation. The statue stands just outside one of the main research buildings, and it's nearly 7 feet tall, encircled by a ring of flame, depicting Shiva mid-dance in the eternal cycle of creation and destruction. To visitors, it's a striking piece of art, and to the global online audience that already viewed CERN with suspicion, it really became something else entirely. The statue's timing and look.
DC politicians want to enact harmful credit card mandates that could take away your cash back and rewards points. Perks that stretch your budget and make life a little easier. Losing these benefits means less money for your family's everyday essentials like gas and groceries. The perks you rely on could disappear, leaving you with higher costs and fewer options. Tell Congress to guard your card and oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card mandates.
Paid for by Electronic Payments Coalition.
Made it ripe for misinterpretation. After all, here we are, the world's most powerful machine for probing the origins of the universe, and standing before it, the God who dances symbolizes the end and rebirth of all existence. Officially, the statue was presented to CERN in 24 as a gift from India, recognizing like the decades of scientific collaboration. And a plaque nearby describes Shiva's dance as a metaphor of rhythmic interplay of matter and energy, the same forces physicists study inside the collider. But the conspiracy communities and that poetic comparison reads as a confession. They argue that CERN's research invokes Shiva's dance, not as a metaphor, but as this ritual performing acts of creation and destruction through these high energy collisions. And in their retelling, Shiva is not simply a cultural symbol. He's the patron deity of this secret order of physicists attempting really to rewrite the universe's blueprint. But the symbolism doesn't really end with the statue. Have you seen the CERN logo itself?
Yeah, it looks like it's 666.
Exactly. It has becoming this reoccurring fixation in these narratives. It composes of these overlapping circular lines, which represent accelerator rings and beam paths. And the design was meant to be this simple technical motif, yet online, many claim to see something darker within its curves, and I do too, right? These six-shaped swirls that, when viewed in a certain way, resemble 666 and the biblical number of the beast. And these YouTube breakdowns that I watched, the overly red circles and the arrows in the logo, insisting that it designs and encodes really this allegiance to the occult or the demonic forces. The ideal that an organization devoted to unlocking the secrets of the universe would embed in this apocalyptic numerology and emblem feels to many believers like deliberate symbolism hidden in plain sight. I think even the names of CERN experiments are really woven in that mythic tapestry as well.
So first point, I think it's bizarre that in a Christianized nation of Switzerland and France, the collider goes through both countries, that you choose to use a paganistic occult deity of the Hindus, which have, I've lost count, I think they have millions of gods. So they choose the god of creation and destruction as their, I mean, I don't want to call it their mascot, but it may as well be if it's sitting in the front of your building. And if you watch the revealing of the statue, it looks like there's a ritual going on around the statue as they're revealing it. These people are in like hoods, like robes, like very occult looking type garb, and they're doing this very ritualistic dance around it. Like when I watched that video, my spirit was pinging on the radar of what the heck is this? It's an odd watch, but out of all the things you can put in front of your building, and a lot of these scientists claim to be agnostic or to be atheist. If you're not going to put something religious there that's not Christianized because of your region, wouldn't it make more sense to put something that's maybe, I don't know, secular, something that has nothing to do with any sort of deity? It's just really odd to me. And this kind of goes back in the past. A lot of scientists in the 1900s, a lot of them were occultists, like Jack Parsons, the head of the Jet Propulsion Labs, big occultist, follower of Aleister Crowley. I think he actually co-wrote a book with the guy that founded Scientology, L. Ron Hubbard. And a ton of scientists back in that era were big believers in Gnosticism and the occult. Like they believed, they don't want you to believe it. They want you not to believe in anything. They don't want you to believe in Jesus. They don't want you to believe in God. But in the back, a lot of their theories and a lot of their practices were shrouded in mystery, and they were obsessed with the occult. Like Jack Parsons was obsessed with summoning an entity. And this is the guy leading a rocketry program. And I don't think that's really changed any different today. I think a lot of these schools that you go to, I think once you get up to the higher level, you get to like your master's and your doctorate, and you go through that second tier, third tier education system. I think they reveal a lot of the more spiritual mysteries, and they guide you down a different path. I think Carl Jung, one of the big psychotherapists of the 18th and 19th century, he claimed that 80% of your thoughts aren't from you. They're from outside entities. And I just think it harkens back to this whole spiritual warfare thing. We're always under the influence of something. Our visual spectrum, I think, only picks up like 0.35%. I could get that number wrong, of the actual electromagnetic spectrum. That's 99 point whatever percent of stuff we can't even see, because we as humans are we live on such a narrow band of not only sight, but sound, and even what we can experience outside of us. But these guys were, a lot of these scientists are big into the occult, and they deep dive in these mysteries because I think part of it is they want power, and part of it, they really want the knowledge. And I think the deeper you get into physics, the more it proves God's existence. It proves how the universe was formed. And now, there was a time, especially when we were growing up, if scientists believed in God, it was a one-off kind of outlier. Now, 99.9% of them believe in God. They debate who it is and what it is. But the consensus is that this creation that we live in could not have happened by accident.
What, the giant statue of Jezebel standing in front of the UN, where a lot of people call it the New World Order, where I believe they have 57 member states or 57 countries that set before it don't sit right with you. It feels a little odd.
Well, look at the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah.
They try to tell you it's a woman. It looks like a very androgynous face. You can't really tell the body structure because it's draped in a robe. It's a replication of Lucifer the Lightbearer, like torch in the air. Around one of his feet, there's a broken shackle. It doesn't look like a woman to me. When I was little, I just accepted that's a strange looking woman. But the more you look at it, the more it looks like a dude. And I think it's a statue made in homage to the evil one.
Yeah, it's always interesting to me because I've had a lot of conversations, and at the end of the day, we all believe in miracles. No matter who you are, you believe in some type of miracle. The agnostics and those with no faith, they still believe in one miracle, the Big Bang. That a Big Bang occurred and all of a sudden somehow we got all this stuff on Earth with organic life and humans and animals and trees and water and air. And it's rare because obviously we haven't discovered it ever again. And I just almost wonder, like, it must take more faith to believe in that garbage than it does just Jesus, because now we're talking about somebody that sacrificed their life for you, that built a kingdom, that this is by design. And I think from a rational perspective, it's easier to believe than just one miracle occurring randomly. And I remember talking to some friends that weren't Christians and had no faith, and they go, but what if you're wrong? Well, then I'm in the same damn boat you already are, right? I'm not going to know that I'm dead, and that'll be it. I won't know I'm wrong. But until then, I will live a good life because I'm trying my best to follow the teachings of Jesus. And if I'm right, and which I believe I am, then I'm in a whole lot better place, right, at the end of times, because I'm going to go to the kingdom of heaven and not fall down to the kingdom of hell. Yeah, these statues and idols that we set up before ourselves are always weird. It's like the bowl of Baal, right, that people worshipped. And I don't know, it sets a little bit uneasy with me. And I've wondered that for perhaps 20 or 30 years about the UN. A lot of people called it the New World Order, or they thought it was going to be the New World Order at that time. And a lot of people were scared of it.
Yeah. So I know there's been some pretty, I use this term loosely, outlandish conspiracy theories about one of the main reasons that CERN was created was to open the door to the abyss. So essentially what people claim is that through smashing these particles together, they can open a door to unleash the 200 fallen angels out of the abyss that God locked down after the flood. They got to get out somehow, because according to the Bible, once the Euphrates River dries up, and I don't think CERN's going to let them in. I really think there's prophecy that has to happen before they are unleashed. And the Euphrates is getting pretty low, which is scary, but there are physical natural signs that have to happen before that's allowed. But it doesn't mean that they can't, again, we're getting fantastical and conspiratorial here, but you can draw the conclusion that just because they can't let them out doesn't mean they can't communicate with them.
Yeah, no, it's a good point.
point. And I think a lot of it comes down to antimatter, that kind of strange mirror version of the ordinary matter that annihilates upon contact with its opposite. And what I found in my research is in physics, antimatter isn't perhaps evil or spiritual. It's simply a matter when reverse charged. And the online imagination has become really this symbol of the ultimate forbidden energy, or the literal power of destruction harnessed by scientists who may or perhaps may not fully understand that what they're playing with. For many believers, that antimatter is the dark fuel of CERN, proof that the organization is really experimenting with forces capable of rewriting the laws of creation itself. The real world basis for this legend traces back to the anti-proton deaccelerator at CERN, a facility that creates these and studies these small quantities of antimatter. In 2010, researchers from the Alpha Collaboration achieved a milestone by trapping this anti-hydrogen atoms for the first time and really holding them in these magnetic cages long enough to study their properties. And for physicists, this was really a groundbreaking achievement, opening the door to deeper understanding to why the universe contains more matter than antimatter. But for people like perhaps us, that announcement sounded like the unveiling of a weapon or a ritual tool. They're storing antimatter underground. One popular blog that I found was stated, like, why would anyone need to store annihilation unless they intended to use it? And you started seeing a lot of this antimatter stuff pop up in the broader CERN myths. Some claimed it was stockpiled as this form of energy source for dimensional travel or this interdimensional beings. Others said it was connected to biblical prophecy, an inversion of creation energy that could bring about the apocalypse. Theologians with kind of the conspiratorial bent began drawing parallels between CERN's antimatter experiments and referencing the bottomless pit in the Book of Revelations. And on YouTube videos that I found with titles like CERN Playing God with the Power of Angels and Demons, and it racked up millions of views, arguing that antimatter was the spiritual energy, the essence of angels that had fallen from grace and now being resurrected through this technology. The myth really deepened when quotes attributed to scientists paired with, you know, dramatic imagery, vials of glowing plasma, stormy skies, the Shiva statue that we talked about, all spending under these kind of like strobe lights. And some creators suggested that antimatter could affect consciousness, erasing the boundary between the physical and the spiritual realms. Others tied it to the ideal of the soul harvesting, claiming CERN's collisions really released this burst of energy capable of distorting the human psyche. Even mainstream science outlets, when describing antimatter's potential, couldn't really help but sound poetic. Antimatter, after all, is the opposite of everything that we know today. Pure energy trapped in perfect symmetry, waiting to meet its mirror and vanish in light. By 2015, that myth had really merged with these older apocalyptic narratives. A now famous viral post claimed that CERN has created a drop of antimatter so powerful it could destroy the planet if it escaped. In reality, the amount produced in CERN is really small, but that didn't really matter when we start talking about stories and the fantastical. I think what makes this strand of CERN legend so compelling is that it blurs the boundaries between fact and symbolism. And antimatter is real. It does annihilate matter on contact. It is stored, studied, and manipulated at CERN. And that kind of leap from laboratory truth to this fear is a very short one in my mind. And the language of annihilation writes its own myth. And in CERN narrative, antimatter becomes the ultimate kind of metaphor between these two worlds and what we're seeing and these portals. So scary stuff.
Yeah, I think we'd be a bit remiss if we didn't talk about some of the whistleblowers. So the most prominent whistleblower is cited as Dr. Astrid Stuckelberger. So this person was a UN WHO consultant with over 30 years of international health policy experience. They conducted interviews between 2022 and 2025. She claims to have dined privately with two unnamed CERN physicists in Portugal, who confided in her about a secret radial nuclear program beneath CERN. According to her, they described a physical portal or dorn at CERN's base. It was only accessible via subatomic experiences through which beings from other dimensions entered our world and exited our world. She alleges there are 17 different dimensions of reality accessed via the LHC's boson experiments, and these entities have manifested twice. Once an entity emerged and sat at the table during a meeting. The second time, it came out and took a scarf from a participant before vanishing. So apparently this thing was cold in hell. I don't know. But Stuckelberg kind of frames this as part of a covert nuclear weapons program, warning of risks like hell on earth from antimatter or strangulate production, and ties this to global control agendas. So interesting story. This isn't your run-of-the-mill person on X or Instagram making these outlandish claims. This, obviously, she's a doctor, and with 30 years of experience in the with the UN and WHO, gives us some credibility in my mind. Again, interesting story. I don't know why you'd risk your reputation to bring that out there if you didn't think it was true yourself, whether or not the people you're interviewing are messing with you or not, their names weren't given. There's also another interesting fella named Anthony Patch. He's a self-described researcher and author on biblical prophecy and quantum physics. Patch claims CERN now admits to communicating with entities from the other side via portals. Obviously, this is denied by CERN, but he links this kind of transhumanism and time prophecies, alleging that the collider summons Lovecraftian great old ones rather than demons. What that means, I don't know. And he, again, in 2025 of this year, he connects this to 3i Atlas, suggesting portals facilitate contact with the occupants. Some other interesting claims from Anthony is that he claims to have analyzed several leaked CERN documents and spoke with several unnamed physicists within CERN, alleging that they purposely create these stable portals for these interdimensional entities to contact and have conversations with. Key claims, the portal weakens the dimensional barrier, allowing these entities to influence human affairs via electromagnetic anomalies. Again, he linked CERN with 3i Atlas, claiming experiments contacted the occupants, essentially applying that not only are they talking to someone in a different dimension, these great old ones, quote unquote, but they can also use CERN as a kind of a conduit for non-terrestrial intelligence, aka aliens. And he also cited the Shiva statue as ritual symbolism and hidden data in public logs showing anomalous oscillations matching ancient text. Again, like I said, that ritual with the unveiling of the statue was bizarre, and I got a bad feeling from it, but that's anecdotal. But and there are several anonymous CERN employees who, again, this points back to Project Bluebeam. And again, there are several of them claiming to be former CERN technicians, and they're warning of something they call a post-portal Project Bluebeam operation. This whistleblower, though unnamed, alleges CERN's LHC has already opened temporary portals, allowing ghost-like entities, 4 to 6 foot tall, mostly shadowy forms, to briefly manifest during high-energy runs. And these were apparently, according to them, captured on internal cameras, but suppressed. These entities allegedly taught scientists hologram tech to stage a global alien invasion using drones and sky projections. And the ultimate goal, like with Project Bluebeam, is global control, one world government, and depopulation. Interesting that Project Bluebeam falls back into this circle of conspiracy love. But
when I hear the great old ones, I think the verse was in Genesis, but somebody would have to fact check me on it. But it was the heroes of renown. I remember hearing that in the Bible. And what are the heroes of renown? Like, they briefly touched on it and they were eventually destroyed in the flood. But what they were talking about was the Nephilim. And it reminds me of perhaps what the great old ones are, is these kind of historic demons that the world encountered.
Yeah, but I think the definition of a demon is an actual dead Nephilim. So I'm not real sure. I guess if you're a dead Nephilim, you're not going to be like, yo, I'm a demon. You're going to be like, yeah, I'm a great mighty warrior from pre-flood. But going back to this anonymous CERN employee. So the portals were stabilized in 2022. With entities emerging as plasma orbs that interacted with equipment. And there's a claim by this anonymous source that these people take data cables, or these entities take data cables. What you need with a data cable is a orb, I don't know. Again, strange stuff. And I think there's a couple more that are pretty interesting. I'll just touch on them quick. In early 2025, so this year, an anonymous CERN physicist claimed that the superproton synchrotron captured a mysterious 4D entity during a March 2024 experiment, described as a ghost particle disturbance. and invisible four-dimensional structure influencing proton paths. The story kind of evolved into a whistleblower tale of an actual interdimensional being briefly trapped in the collider. Reports allege these entities cause equipment malfunctions before dissipating, with footage showing like this anomalous shadow figures on the monitors. The claim was that this entity was a higher dimensional being from one of the 17 subatomic realms, not a particle, entering via the LHC link portals and mimicking human forms. This kind of ties back to Stucklebird's dimensional list, the 17 subatomic realms. I don't know if this person's like trying to piggyback on her alleged end of reviews as secondhand proof, but one viral kind of video I found quotes a leaked memo and non-local consciousness interference. These kind of leaks are coming out in the past few years. And the last one I want to talk about is a fellow named Sergio Bertolucci. Sergio was CERN's former director of research from 2009 to 2016. He made a statement saying something may come through a dimensional gateway or doorway opened by the LHC. Conspiracy amplifiers claim that he was a reluctant whistleblower, revealing entity risk, alleging post-retirement leaks about portals summoning demons or other ET forms during the 2012 run. He claims that the LHC creates microscopic black holes as portals to extra dimensions where entities, plasma intelligence could emerge and sit at the table, which that goes back to echoing what Stuckelberg said. Bertolucci allegedly warned of uncontrolled visitors and private memos suppressed until 2024 declassification. I didn't pull the document, but if this is true, if there is declassified documentations warning of uncontrolled visitors, that's pretty significant proof considering that this guy was the director of research from 2009 to 2016. So whatever is happening there, whether or not they're doing it purposely or not, there seems to be some sort of unrealized effect that they're having on the world around us.
So I'm curious, and I didn't catch the name, but I think it was a female scientist that worked there for 30 years.
She worked for the UN and the WHO, but gotcha. She'd interviewed some of the former CERN employees.
Gotcha. It's something about the demon set at the stable or stole a scarf or what have you. Did she mention what it looked like?
So again, I didn't read her document per se. I read the recap. At least I found the recap in my research. I think that they are described as like shadowy figures, like almost, I want to say, dark translucent. They look like a shadow person. That's the best way I can think of to explain it.
Gotcha. That's interesting. Now, tonight we talked a lot about scary things, time travel, the Mandela effect, portals, perhaps connections to revelations. And we heard some really interesting stories about what people experience there as well. But I also think it's important to look ahead. And when we look ahead, what we see is bigger rings and obviously bigger stories. Even as the Large Hadron Collider continues its long run of discovery, CERN's ambitions are already pushing beyond its current limits. The next great dream, the Future Circular Collider, or the FCC, looms on the horizon. A proposed 100-kilometer ring that would dwarf the existing 27-kilometer LHC today. If approved, and it sounds like it will be, it would become the largest scientific instrument ever built by humanity. Designed first to study the Higgs boson with unprecedented precision, and later to smash protons together, energies up to 100 TeV, which I've never seen this abbreviation before in my research, but
I can tell you what it is if you want me to.
Yeah, what is it?
So it's called tera electron volts. So essentially, it's just a unit of energy in particle physics. So to break that down in layman's terms, so it's a unit of energy equal to 1/1,000,000,000th of an electron volt. So particle accelerators like the LHC use TeV to measure the energy of colliding particles. So to you and me, it doesn't really mean much, but it's the higher the number, the more energy that they're sending these particles around.
Gotcha. Yeah, thanks for that explanation. And they're saying energy is up to 100 of these, which is nearly 7 times what the LHC can achieve today. To the scientific community, this represents the next logical step in the quest to understand dark matter, the origins of mass, and the unification of forces. But to the world of people like us, it may be the next chapter in this unfolding cosmic drama that we're seeing before our eyes today. Plans for the FCC are still in development, but the numbers alone inspire
awe. It's an estimated cost in the tens of billions of dollars, a construction timeline stretching toward the late 2030s, and a buried ring so vast it would encircle the entire city of Geneva. For supporters, it's a vision of progress, a successor to the collider that proved humanity could recreate conditions similar to those a fraction of a second after the Big Bang. For critics, it's a machine that feels almost mythic in its audacity. Every time CERN announces another upgrade or future concept, people start talking of larger portals, global rituals, and new dimensional thresholds. And in those online narratives, the bigger the ring, the bigger the risk. I think what's striking is how science and myth really move in parallel with this topic. When CERN publishes feasibility studies and engineering designs, content creators release their own interpretations of what it may impact. Digital prophecies and countdown predictions start to kind of flood online forums. And the official slides talk about superconducting magnets and energy efficiency. And the mythic versions speak of gateways, sigils, and the world brink for transformation. But ultimately, I think we don't know what we don't know. The scientists have their theory, but there is some world possible impact that we could see from these significant changes that will likely occur when these experiments kick off. And what I'm seeing with it, it's going to be so big and the discoveries may be so vast. It may be like discovering the atom bomb all over again, because when you start smashing things together at accelerated energy forces, we also don't know how big of a bang there's going to be and what destruction is going to follow. There's potential for our sun to go dark, for our seas to boil, who knows? But I do think it can be some pretty scary stuff. And it connects a lot to what people fear today when it comes to the government can control earthquakes, that they can manipulate the weather, that they can do all of these things and perhaps be really tragic weapons as well.
Yeah, it's scary stuff. Is that what you think the CERN is? Is that your conclusion?
It's for me, this is a really tricky topic. And I think for once, I almost feel out of my depth. Obviously, I've done a lot of research. I am a science guy in a way. I know how to program things. I understand people. There's a lot of things I do understand. And there's a lot with CERN that I just don't. I think there's a lot of risk. When you look at the world from a biblical worldview, there are some concerns. And my concerns start with the statues of Shiva, of these unauthorized pranks that occur at CERN that are showing human sacrifices, to all of this weirdness that surrounds it. I think CERN, I don't know, man. I think it could be for good and I think it could be for bad. And it lies with the people whose hands God has turned it over to ultimately to make these discoveries. But I do think it can also be a weapon. And especially as we watch our world get closer and closer to World War III, as we start to see countries that are going to war with each other, as we hear rumors of wars and wars, as is quoted in Revelations, I think it may be prioritized of how we can A, protect ourselves or go on the offensive. So I do think it has strategic weapon capabilities along with studying. And I do think it could possibly learn how to harness earthquakes and shifting tectonic plates and create natural man-made disasters in another realm of possibility. So I think we have to be careful. One of the things that you read about is a lot of the numerology. I don't put a lot of faith in numerology. God talks about it kind of some in the Bible, like seven's his kind of number and the devil is 666. But numerology and a lot of these conspirator forums go a little bit deeper. They connect it to the World Wide Web. Without going down a tangent of why they connected to the World Wide Web, what we do know about it is that it's, in my opinion, a weapon of evil more than it is something for good. Yeah, obviously we use the internet every day. We're able to communicate, me and you, we're in different states, we're able to have a podcast. But the amount of damage it is called is pretty irreversible. When you talk about addictions and pornography, to you can find anything you want on the World Wide Web. And we know about that discovery very well. And I see that as a really bad thing. So I'm not seeing good things come out of CERN. I don't really need to know about matter and antimatter, but it sounds scary. And it sounds like building blocks of creation and destruction, which I'm not sure we should be dabbling in anyways. And when you start connecting the wrong people to CERN, and you're starting to see this 666 and they're prioritizing all the bad things. I think only bad things can come from it. So I don't know if I would want my taxes to go pay for CERN to dig into all this evil. Perhaps maybe we should just give a little more money to the needy and take care of our own societies.
Yeah. So what comes to mind to me is that it was said in the Bible at the end times that the end of the world, the end of creation, will be like the days of Noah. So I think, okay, let's think about the days of Noah. So we know the fallen angels came to earth, made it with women, and these angels taught man a lot of stuff that we have. So just drawing, looping this back around the CERN, I don't think it's outside of the realm of possibility that they are trying to contact something. Maybe they know what it is, maybe they don't, but trying to get information on how to build new tech, new advanced tech. I think there's enough evidence with some of these other scientists back in the 1900s, their obsession with the occult, their obsession with trying to summon entities, all for the sole purpose of getting knowledge. Like, with knowledge comes power. And for me, with the Shiva statue, with that, what I call a ritual during its unveiling, there's a lot of occult out there around this place. And with these stories, though unverified, with people that have credibility, with people who have worked there, passing the concerns and giving these testimonies of entities coming through these portals. And we talked about a couple setting down and just the concerns of legit scientists worrying about triggering a black hole event. We're playing with technology. I don't think we really truly understand. And again, with anything else in life, I think there's plenty of scientists there that go, I just want to study physics and that's all I do. Cool. But you get to a certain upper echelon who may know what it's really for and who may use the naive scientists, use their data to propel their agenda. Do I think there's stuff coming through the portals? And this is we'll get into Oak Ridge. There's another podcaster named Tony Merkel of the Confessionals, and he's had guests on, or he knows, I don't know if he's had a guest on yet. I'll have to check that out. But there was some chatter of him having a guest on. He worked at Oak Ridge, and he said every time they turned the particle accelerator on, like entities would come out, like physical entities, and they would have to either kill them or try to get them to go back in, which I think 99 times out of 100, they would have to kill them. So I think they are summoning something. They're thinning the veil, and I think they want to because they want to get knowledge. Whether they think they're talking to demons, fallen angels, angels, benevolent entities, aliens, I don't know. But I think that they know how to thin that veil and are trying to get information.
Yeah, it's a circle back to where we started tonight. It's the Christian reading of modern science mythic narrative. In my mind, really, CERN stands as the 21st century Tower of Babel, a monument to mankind's relentless climb towards the divine. And that ancient story told in Genesis 11 that speaks of people united by one language and one ambition to build a tower that reaches heaven. And God, so displeased by their arrogance, scatters them and confuses their tongues. And thousands of years later, that story really feels reborn in steel. A dream of climbing heaven now recast as descent into creating the atom and antimatter and all these things we were talking about tonight. I think, as you said, as we're getting closer to the divine and thinning that veil, kind of reminds me of the story of Babel. And then you wonder, maybe they build it big enough and God says no more and a big boom happens and it's all said and done.
Yeah, dude, we'll have to do a deep dive on Nimrod and the Tower of Babel.
Yeah, it's a good story. All right, so what do you want to leave our audience with tonight as we close it out?
Yeah, man, same thing every week. It's been a long episode, so I'll keep it short and sweet. Jesus love you. We love you. I love you, brother. That's it.
Nice. Yeah. Remember discernment. Remember to question things. And that's what we're doing here. We're testing the reality. So we're trying to uncover the facts. We're not just buying the mainstream narrative where people want you to believe or think or act a certain way. Remember to have discernment. And more importantly for us, remember to like, subscribe, and follow. And until next time, we are Zero Signal.
We're out.
We've hit the 0 hour. That's a wrap on this week's transmission. New episodes drop weekly, so stay tuned and don't miss the next signal. Follow, subscribe, and spread the word. You've been listening to Zero Signal. We're out.